Krishna consciousness, if these verses are impressed within us, it's easy to call upon them. And what they do is they invoke remembrance of Krishna and Krishna's teachings, which is the goal of bhakti yoga, is to remember Krishna. So they become very helpful, a tool that we can use. And if you don't know any verses, that's okay, because you have to start somewhere. But if you keep practicing, it'll be amazing. Within a couple weeks or a month, you'll be spitting these things out, you'll be these verses out like nothing. So we have these are here for all of us to use. You can take them home with you to practice. We'll practice reciting these every week. Or I can send them to you via email if you'd like it that way. If you are going to take them, just let me know so I can make more copies so that we have them here.
The one thing is, we're going to have to put in, I like this format for here, but we have to get in the word for word. Because they'll be able to learn the verse and use it if they learn what each word means. I mean, I think this is quick to go through the Gita, but the word for word is really powerful. As you said, they're like weapons. And when my mind starts, drifting on, yadayadayadharmasha, or I say, yato-yato-nishchalati-manas-chan-chan-mastira, and that means from whatever, wherever the mind wanders, due to its unsteady and flickering nature, you have to bring it back under control. So it automatically shoots in there. So as I start spacing out, the verse comes. So yeah, it's wonderful. It's like weapons. But that's what I think. I think we should read these first two now. And, well, however you want, let's do the front page. You want to do like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We should probably do start off call and response, so we get into we can learn the meter, as well as just get used to chanting.
Okay.
The more we do it, the more accustomed we'll get to it, and we'll be able to go through it faster.
No problem.
But for right now, like I said, we're starting off.
Dhritarashtra uvacha.
Dhritarashtra uvacha.
Dharmakshetre kurukshetre.
Dharmakshetre kurukshetre.
Samaveta yujutsava.
Samaveta yujutsava.
Mamaka pandavaschaiva.
Mamaka pandavaschaiva.
Kimakovata sanjaya.
Kimakovata sanjaya.
This verse is important because it's the first verse of Bhagavad Gita. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? This is important. This is the verse that we were studying last week and we have to come back to today. Dharma karapanya dosho pahatra swabhava.
Karapanya dosho pahatra swabhava.
Prichchami twam dharma samuda cheta. Yatshreya shan nishchitam bhuhitan me.
Yatshreya shan nishchitam bhuhitan me.
Shishyaste ham sadhi mam twam prapanam.
Shishyaste ham sadhi mam twam prapanam.
This is what Arjuna said to Krishna. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple, I am your shisha, and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvam neme janadipa.
Na tvam neme janadipa.
Na chaiva na bhavishyama.
Na chaiva na bhavishyama.
Sarve vayam atakparam.
Sarve vayam atakparam.
And this is what Krishna tells Arjuna, which is very, very important. He tells him, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, for in the future shall any of us cease to be. Dehino smin yata dehe.
Dehino smin yata dehe.
Komaram yovanam jara.
Komaram Yavananjara.
Tathadehantara Praptir.
Tathadehantara Praptir.
Dhirastatra Namuyate.
Dhirastatra Namuyate.
As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Mantra sparshas tu kunteya.
Mantra sparshas tu kunteya.
Titosna sukadukada.
Titosna sukadukada.
Agamapayino nityas.
Agamapayino nityas.
Tongs to tikswash bharata.
Tongs to tikswash bharata.
O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bart, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. What did I do just now?
Not your
did I go too much?
No, that was good. No, we had just the translation was on the back.
So, I stopped there. Today in the Gita, we'll go through some of these verses. We'll see specifically what Arjuna was saying to Krishna when he said that he was going to surrender. And we'll see what Krishna did when he took the position as a spiritual master. You know, another purpose of the spiritual master is that the spiritual master has a duty too. And his duty is to educate the disciples in the science of Krishna consciousness, to train them and educate them. Why? So that they can become 100% God conscious. So without the training of the spiritual master, then one can't really get to know and love Krishna. So that is why the spiritual master is there. He externally trains the disciple. And you can hear how Krishna is training Arjuna. When Arjuna, what I like about this section is that Arjuna felt as though he could understand his problem was weakness of heart. He calls it miserly weakness. He says, what did that mean? Arjuna saw his relatives, his family members on the opposing side, and he lost control of his faculties. He started his hands were trembling. His bow was slipping from his hands. You know, he's crying. He just refused to do his duty. And he was a warrior. So by no means was Arjuna a coward, but Arjuna was bewildered. And that bewilderment, what was that a manifestation of? That bewilderment was a manifestation of forgetfulness of the real self. Although Arjuna poses so many wonderful arguments, logical, moral reasons why he shouldn't fight, still, according to Srila Prabhupada, he was trying to skillfully avoid the discharge of his duty because he just didn't want to do it. So, at this point, I'm going to open it back up. He's decided to place everything before Krishna as a spiritual master. And the relationship has to change. And we went over, what Vishwanath Chakravarti had to say in Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushana. Sorry, I don't feel like being your spiritual master. Go ask somebody else. You have respect for others. Srila Vyasadeva, go ask them, I don't feel like being your spiritual master. This is just the way he treated him. But the relation, talks between the spiritual master and the disciple are very, very serious. So, in understanding this, as I said last week, I felt again that I had neglected to tell you just a lot of sweet things about the spiritual master. There's another prayer that we chant, and it explains that the spiritual master is, I'm hearing something else. It's another prayer by Vishwanath Chakravarti, and it's Guru Vandanam. And in that prayer, it is a description. And at the temple, it's with, when we have Guru Puja, then we chant this prayer. And after we, it's Sri Guru Charanma Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma. And after that, we say, we recite the English. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only ways by which we can attain pure devotional service. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only ways by which we can attain pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great honor and reverence, or I offer my respectful obeisance unto him. By his grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering, and what? And attain the mercy of Krishna. Have you ever felt like you were having some suffering in your life? There were some obstacles on your path. It says, by the grace of the spiritual master, one can cross the ocean of material suffering and attain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified. How? By the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. Divya Gan, he is my Lord, birth after birth. From him ecstatic prem, which we're looking for, love of Krishna emanates. By him, avidya, ignorance is destroyed. In the Vedic scriptures, they sing of his character. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy, friend of the poor and Lord and master of the devotees. O master, please be merciful unto us. Please give us the shade of your lotus feet. We take shelter of your lotus feet. So, it's paraphrasing it, but that gives a glimpse of what we mean when we say the spiritual master. And when I left here last week, I didn't really explain it like that. And I didn't feel good. Because in the prayer we read early, by the grace of the spiritual master, one gets the blessing and the mercy of Krishna. Without the blessing of the spiritual master, one's destination is unknown. Therefore, in our lineage, in our discipline, it is imperative that we sort out the spiritual master. And just as one takes the Bhagavad Gita, when you pick up Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. So if you want to hear it, then theoretically, you have to at least start off by saying, well, Krishna's God, and let me hear what he has to say. But as you go and hear what Krishna has to say, there's so many explanations on what Krishna has to say. And that's done by Srila Prabhupada, who is the Shiksha Guru, the instructing spiritual master. I think this is very important because Shiksha and Diksha, as I said, are equal manifestations of the mercy of the spiritual master, which ultimately is the mercy of Krishna. But in reading these literatures, it's our first opportunity to get instruction from the spiritual master. Here, Krishna externally is being a spiritual master, and as well as his representative is here together in the Bhagavad Gita. So from that foundation, from the education and the training in the science of Krishna consciousness, when a person decides, as Arjuna did, now, you know, no more friendly talks, you know, now I'm confused, and I want to find that person who can give me shelter, who can dissipate the illusion within me. At that time, one will actually have the understanding how to do that. You will know what type of person to look for. How? By studying Bhagavad Gita and hearing from Krishna himself and from his representative, the spiritual master. So it's a very, very important, clear point. We should always feel as though we are learning about the spiritual master and we're hearing from the spiritual master. And as we go on and we say, well, I'm going to take diksha from someone, then we know what the relationship entails. Why? Because someone came here to make sure that not only did we understand what Krishna wanted us to know about the science of Krishna consciousness, but he explained it in an easily understandable way so that we would be able to apply it in our own lives. Oftentimes I back up and I look at Arjuna's dilemma, then I reflect it on us. Why? Because as Arjuna went through something, we too were going through something. We are following in the footsteps of Arjuna. So Arjuna and Krishna have had a very friendly relationship, and Arjuna has put forth a lot of very nice arguments. And oftentimes, they sound really good, and we agree with them. And people who are on the outside also agree with a lot of things that Arjuna are saying, why he doesn't want to fight. But why is it that Krishna wants Arjuna to go in and kill these people? That doesn't sound so nice. It just does. And plus, what to speak of the fact, your family members, it doesn't sound good. So, the main point is, Arjuna's a warrior. And there is this war is religion against irreligion. And as you know, as we'll go on further, Krishna will explain to Arjuna that all these men, never was their time when they did not exist, nor in the future shall any of them cease to be. Why? Because we're eternal, unborn, undying, not slain when the body is slain. And this is the important point that we're going to come to in the next section of the Bhagavad Gita. That all the identification that Arjuna was having at this point, he's misidentifying. He's thinking that these are my family members, that I am the protector, this is my teacher. These external things are true. But ultimately, who is Arjuna? Who is he? He's an eternal servant of God. He's not this body, he's not this mind, but he's the eternal spirit soul. And these are the instructions that Krishna is about to explain to us. So let's hear a little bit from what Krishna had to say. We read the purport before. At 10. Krishna says, Tom Uvacha Rishikesha.
I don't think everybody's there yet.
Huh?
I don't think everybody's there yet.
Okay, I'll wait.
First chapter.
What chapter?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's chapter 2, text 10. Okay. Tam uvacha Rishikesha.
Tam uvacha Rishikesha.
Prahashan eva parata.
Prahashan eva parata.
Senayor ubayor madye.
Senayor ubayor madye.
Vesidantam idam vacha.
Vesidantam idam vacha.
O descendant of Bart, at that time, smiling in the midst of both the armies, Krishna, and both the armies spoke. O descendant of Bharat, at that time, Krishna, smiling in the midst of both armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. Purport. The talk was going on between intimate friends, namely Rishikesh and Gudikesh. As friends, both of them were on the same level. But one of them voluntarily became a student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. As Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as master of everyone. And yet the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son, or a lover of a devotee who wants him in such a role. But when he was accepted as spiritual master, he at once assumed the role and talked with the disciple like the master, with gravity, as it is required. It appears that the talks between the master and the disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies, so that all were benefited. So the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any particular person, society, or community, but they are for all, and friends or enemies are equally entitled to hear of them. I want to hear, well, you hear first of all of the relationship. They were just friends. But now Arjuna, he doesn't want that to continue. And he decides to surrender. He accepts Krishna as the master. And he's the student. And Krishna is smiling. Let's continue.
You can tell there that although Arjuna is shaking, Krishna is smiling, he's composed. He's under control.
Mm.
He's not worried. But Arjuna, he just broke down.
He had a moment. Na tweva hum jatu na sam.
11.
That's, did I miss one?
Yeah.
Okay. Shri Bhagavanu Vacha.
Shri Bhagavanu Vacha.
Asochan avasochastvam.
Asochan avasochastvam.
Pragavidam shabasase. Gatasam agatasamcha.
Gatasam agatasamcha.
Nanuso chanti panditaha.
Nanuso chanti panditaha.
The Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead.
Translation. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, "You are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is the body and what is the soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition." As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than the religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body.
So, what was Arjuna's confusion?
He didn't know matter versus spirit. He was lamenting over the body.
Yes. Yes. The body, I love, the body is born, and today, tomorrow, or the next day, it's going to die. You know? What is knowledge? Knowing the difference between matter and spirit, and the controller of them both. What is matter? This body. What is spirit? Us. And who's controlling us? Krishna. You know? So it's, that is why Krishna chastised him. Arjuna put forth so many nice arguments presenting himself as a learned man. But he wasn't, because the symptoms that he showed shows that he wasn't. He was crying. He didn't want to do his duty. He was bewildered. Of course, he was placed in that situation by Krishna. But this was the state of Arjuna. Have you ever felt in life bewildered, shaken, tears coming from the eyes? I can't go any further. I have. That's called delusion. That's what happens to the bodily conception of life. We have our attachments and it just brings about lamentation. But anyway, I want to let Krishna say it, because Prabhupada and Krishna are doing such a nice, a wonderful job of explaining Arjuna's situation. It's better we hear, and then in the end we can summarize what has taken place. Text 12. Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvevaham jatu nasam.
Natvam ne me janadipa.
Natvam ne me janadipa.
Nachaiva na bhavishyama.
Nachaiva na bhavishyama.
Sarve vayam matakparam.
Sarve vayam matakparam.
Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Purport. In the Vedas, in the Katha Upanishad, as well as this Svetsvatsvatara Upanishad, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the maintainer of innumerable living entities, in terms of their different situations, according to individual work and reaction of work. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is also, by his plenary portions, alive in the heart of every living entity. Only saintly persons who can see, within and without, the same Supreme Lord can actually attain to the perfect stage, to the perfect and eternal peace. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetanam eko bahunam yo vidanhati kaman. Tam atma shtaham ye nupai yashanti diras tesham shanti shasvati netarshaham. Katha Upanishad 2.2.13.
The same Vedic truth given to Arjuna is given to all persons in the world who pose themselves as very learned but factually have but a poor fund of knowledge. The Lord says clearly that he himself, Arjuna, and all the kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their condition and in their liberated situations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is supreme individual person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associate, and all the kings assembled there are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past, and it is not that they will not remain eternal persons. Their individuality existed in the past, and their individuality will continue in the future without interruption. Therefore, there is no cause for lamentation for anyone. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusions, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence is not supported hence by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. Krishna clearly says here that in the future also the individuality of the Lord and others, as it is confirmed in the Upanishads, will continue eternally. This statement of Krishna's is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. If individuality were not a fact, then Krishna would not have stressed this so much even for the future. The Mayavadi may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual but material. Even accepting the argument that the individuality is material, then how can one distinguish Krishna's individuality? Krishna affirms his individuality in the past and confirms his individuality in the future also. He has confirmed his individuality in many ways. An impersonal Brahman has been declared to be subordinate to him. Krishna has maintained spiritual individuality all along. if he is accepted as an ordinary conditioned soul in individual consciousness, then his Bhagavad Gita has no value as authoritative scripture. A common man with all the four defects of human frailty is unable to teach that which is worth hearing.
The Gita is above such literature. No mundane book compares with the Bhagavad Gita. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. The Mayavadi argues that the plurality mentioned in this verse is conventional and that it refers to the body. But previous to this verse, such a bodily conception is already condemned. After condemning the bodily conception of the living entities, how was it possible for Krishna to place a conventional proposition on the body again? Therefore, individuality is maintained on spiritual grounds and is thus confirmed by great acharyas like Sri Ramanuja and others. It is clearly mentioned in many places in the Gita that this spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. Those who are envious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no bona fide access to the great literature. The non-devotee's approach to the teachings of Gita is something like a bee licking on the bottle of honey. One cannot have a taste of honey unless one opens the bottle. Similarly, the mysticism of the Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees, and no one else can taste it, as it is stated in the fourth chapter of the book. Nor can the Gita be touched by the persons who envy the very existence of the Lord. Therefore, the Mayavadi explanation of the Gita is a most misleading representation of the core truth. Lord Chaitanya has forbidden us to read commentations made by the Mayavadis and warns that one who takes to such an understanding of the Mayavadi philosophy loses all power to understand the real mystery of Gita. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. The plurality of individual soul and the Lord is an eternal fact, and it is confirmed by Vedas as above mentioned.
Wow, it's very, very, very nice. Krishna's in the Bhagavatam says, Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajganam avaya paramati paramatmati bhagavat iti shabyate. That the absolute truth is realized in three phases of understanding, and all three of them are identical. Such three phases are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So all these phases are still Krishna. The glaring effulgence that the Mayavadis you want to merge into, that's Krishna. Paramatma is still Krishna. But Sri Krishna Bhagavan is the most personal aspect of Krishna. But it's all the same. It's all Krishna. It's non-different. But it's different levels, different aspects of Krishna. So Krishna is God. He's eternal. And we're eternal. As explained, nityo nityanams chaitanas chaitananam. Later in the Gita, Krishna says, mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhutak sanatanam nakshastrani indrani prakritistani karshati. He says, the living entities in this material world are my eternal, fragmented parts and parcels. Due to conditioned life, they're very struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. So, Krishna says, We're individual, eternally, and we're His. He explained that also. But the real reason that the Mayavadis will never be able to understand Bhagavad Gita, because there is a prerequisite for understanding Bhagavad Gita. It's not academic understanding or scholastic capabilities, but to understand Bhagavad Gita, as explained here, it's hinted from the fourth chapter, when Krishna told Arjuna that at some point the science as it is had appeared to be lost, but Krishna was reestablishing this science with Arjuna. Why? because Arjuna, he says, Bhakto Sime Yata Taiti, because Arjuna was his devotee and he was his friend, therefore he would be able to understand or enter into the mystery of this science. So Bhagavad Gita is a book for devotees. Unless one is a devotee of the Lord, he will never be able to understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is Guhyam. It's the secret. It says Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. It's the king of knowledge. It's the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest form of religion. And it gives direct perception to the self. It's everlasting and it's joyfully performed. So the Gita is for devotees. And unless one is a devotee of the Lord, it's just a waste of time. He won't be able to understand Bhagavad Gita. And this individuality of the living entity, as you go on in the Gita, it's confirmed further as we go on explaining. I think there's a verse in the 14th chapter where Krishna talks about the spiritual world. There's an eternal place, and there's eternal marketplace and eternal situations called devotional life. Can't remember. I guess I'm going to pull it. I think it's 14:2. I love the Prabhupada in that purport at the end. Idam Gyanam Upashtritya. By becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation, nor disturbed at the time of dissolution. It's in the end that the point is explained, but I'll read this purport. It says, after acquiring perfect transcendental knowledge, one acquires qualitative equality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becoming free from the repetition of birth and death. One does not, however, lose his identity as an individual soul. It is understood from Vedic literature that the liberated souls who have reached the transcendental planets of the spiritual sky always look to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Being engaged in this transcendental loving service, even after liberation, the devotees do not lose their individual identities. Generally, in the material world, whatever knowledge we get is contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Knowledge which is not contaminated by the three modes of material nature is called transcendental knowledge. As soon as one is situated in that transcendental knowledge, he is on the same platform as that of the Supreme Person. Those who have no knowledge of the spiritual sky hold that after being freed from the material activities of the material form, this spiritual identity becomes formless without any variegatedness. However, just as there is material variegatedness in this world, there's also variegatedness. Those in ignorance of this think that spiritual existence is opposed to material variety. But actually, and this is the part that I did this for, but actually, in the spiritual sky, one attains a spiritual form. There are spiritual activities, and the spiritual situation is called devotional life. That atmosphere is said to be uncontaminated, and there one is equal in quality with the Supreme Lord. To obtain such knowledge, one must develop all the spiritual qualities. One who thus develops the spiritual qualities is not affected either by the creation or destruction of the material world. Anyway, I jumped off on something else, but it's the individuality is there for the living entities in that relationship with Krishna.
Why do you think Prabhupada brings this up now? Because Krishna's making a point
to Arjuna that, you know, you're eternal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to die, they're not going to die. We transform into a different body, and he gets into that in the next verse. Prabhupada goes real strong into this, really trying to make a connection of, you know, there's different philosophies out there. Some people think that we're, you know, we merge into God, or we merge into to Brahman at the end. And Prabhupada really, he spends a great deal of his purport and going through it. We just read a lot about it. Why is that? Is that something we should really take away from this?
You have to.
And why is that? Why do you think Prabhupada's driving home that point?
Good point. Well, for a couple reasons. One is because that we don't become swayed when explaining that we're not our bodies, that we're spirit soul. We should know who we actually are. And a spirit soul, although he's thinking that if they're killed, they don't, you know, they're eternal souls, but they also have an eternal existence, you know, with Krishna. And that doesn't change either. Like the one became many. Krishna is always Krishna, and we're always his living entities, eternally. So there are understandings. The Mayavadi philosophy goes completely against that. And I think Prabhupada wanted to explain very clearly, because Prabhupada is the one who's emphasizing more in the purports. I think Prabhupada wanted to establish clearly our real position and Krishna's real position. Just like Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Well, how is that existence? You know? Do we lose our individuality? Do we become one with the Supreme? Prabhupada's whole mission was to stomp out impersonalism and voidism. And if he didn't do it here, we could have walked away with a different conception, because it's already out there. Now, that's the best I could think about it. What do you think? Let me pull something. Where's my surrender?
Yeah.
Let me see.
He goes over a lot of the same. He kind of goes over.
The same thing that Prabhupada said.
Yeah.
Anything specific? Let me see if there's any nice point that he can make.
The point was that Prabhupada goes into great detail.
You mean why Prabhupada is specifically mentioning about Mayavadi philosophy at all? Like, at all means, like, why so much in detail in this purport? Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, he takes liberty here to make a point. Not so much that we're eternal, but to drive away these two conflicting philosophies that are there. And it's almost like at this point you can go down two roads. And I guess maybe because we're in the beginning, Prabhupada's saying we're taking you down the road of kind of personal realization as opposed to kind of impersonal realization. And that's going to kind of take, you know, that's going to be the direction we're going to head for the rest of the Bhagavad Gita.
Actually, in one of the lectures, this question was asked to Purijan Prabhu. I was fortunate to be there. So one, Mataji asked that, why is Prabhupada mentioning about impersonal philosophy in the beginning? You know, I don't even know about it, and I don't even, you know, really have any understanding. And in the beginning, even in the introduction a little bit, and even in subsequent verses, and specifically in this verse, Prabhupada is mentioning about it. So why is it? So Purijan Prabhu said, when a child is born, actually, he doesn't have any disease. But still, we start giving him, you know, injections, vaccination, and all these kind of things, so that he does not catch the disease. So he gave a very good analogy that's what Prabhupada is doing. Prabhupada is now itself, you know, giving us the prophylaxis so that we don't catch this disease. because there are so many subtle points, and if actually we interact with different other traditions, and we see that there is that the concept is not as clear. We are very fortunate that we have to hear from Prabhupada, because Prabhupada delineated everything. Now this is what it is and this is not what it is. Sometimes, you know, in the beginning especially, we become little, you know, bewildered. Why is so much, you know, emphasis, or why so much strictness? But as we grow, or as we advance our, in terms of our reading and other things and interaction with others, we actually realize that it is so nice that we have the right direction. Just like if I'm driving, if specific directions are there, okay, this Govinda's restaurant, South Street, then you turn right, and then you go 3 blocks, then you turn left. What if those specific directions are not there? And if there have been, okay, Govinda is at South and Broad, you know, you just go and find out. And then you keep asking everyone, oh, which one is it? So very confusing. But if we have specific directions, everything very specific, this has to be like this, then it becomes very easy. Okay, we just follow and we reach Krishna. So that is, you know, like, initially I started with I heard, but this is my understanding. And the other point is, why in this purport? I think this purport is a beautiful purport in which, beautiful verse by Krishna, in which Krishna is specifically saying that individuality always stays. Even before it was there, even later it will be there. There are many other verses in which Krishna says, but in this verse it's very clear. Very, very difficult to, you know, misinterpret this verse. But still, you know, if you're bewildered, you can do it. Otherwise, this we can easily show to anyone and say, see, Krishna is directly mentioning, you know, clearly that individuality was there and is going to be there. So this is my understanding.
Yeah. Sweet. And it keeps them separated. Krishna, the living entity, he keeps it separated. Bhoyojant did this here. Krishna tells Arjuna, in the past I was present, in the present I am Krishna, and in the future I will be Krishna. So that Krishna's position never changed. In the past you existed, in the present you exist, and in the future you will exist. And all the kings assembled here were all individuals. So he's substantiated that it's not going to change. Individuality is always going to be there. But Krishna's always going to be God, and we're always going to be, you know, the living entity. Our positions aren't going to change. And, you know, I used to always say many years ago, similar to that point about demigod worship, I used to think, why would Prabhupada talk so much about the demigods? I don't know the demigods. Who's worshiping it? We're in the West. Why is there so much demigod worship? But there's so much demigod worship going on in the West. And the main point you said, only later when our eyes were opened with real knowledge were we able to see, you know, what was demigod worship, what was, in, you know, just out and out impersonalism, you know, what was devotional service. So it's great. I love that. You used to say, said that you educate the kid before. There's so many diseases, you get a vaccination. Yeah, before you catch it.
Cause I have one question in the book. Okay, yes, probably.
No, I was just going to say that when I first read a Bhagavad Gita, I came from studying Buddhism and probably a lot of my body interpretations of the Vedas. And to get that to me as soon as possible, to just kind of say, this is different, maybe this would have been another spiritual book on the shelf. But instead of, oh, this is different, this is not impersonal, wait, what's the difference? Right off the bat, I'm like, oh, okay, I got to go through this to know. So, like, I'm not saying that's why Prabhupada did that, but it's definitely beneficial for somebody to get that right off the bat.
There's another point.
One question. The Purport Prabhupada mentions that Mayavadis give gave an argument that this individuality which is being mentioned in this particular verse is material individuality. Right?
Yeah.
And then Prabhupada mentions that it could not be material because just prior to this, Krishna was mentioning has condemned the bodily conception, so it should not be bodily conception. But I didn't really understand that point because if it would have been material individuality, how can it be eternal? Because material anyways is going to die in the past and it's going to die, you know, not last in the future. So I don't think I understood that part. Of course, it's an argument by Mayavadis, so that could be another way of refuting it, but I don't really know if I have understood it correctly.
I think he was saying that in that example, a Mayavadi may argue that existence is always there. And right now we're existing thinking we are the body, but that's just a material covering. But once you get out of that illusion, existence will continue. But your existence is simply just, you realize that you're God. And your existence continues once that illusion goes. And he said, but that can't be true, because if that's referring to Krishna, and you're saying that Krishna is under illusion, then the Bhagavad Gita itself has no value. Krishna has to be understood as a liberated, as a person who does not fall under illusion. So that argument can't apply to Krishna, because Krishna, in order for Bhagavad Gita to be a book worth studying, has, you know, Krishna can't be under illusion.
Right.
It's almost 8.
Almost 8?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. Okay, so next week, go from 13 to about, you go from 13 to 20, because so many of them are going to speak about, Krishna's going to explain the nature of the soul. So you can read to 20. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Thanks, Doc. Where's Prabhupada?
There may be some more questions. I don't know if there's any more questions. If anybody does it. No.
Are there any more questions or comments?
I was wondering, what are the four afflictions of the individual? The four afflictions of a individual soul that Prabhupada speaks of?
The four defects.
Tendency to be an illusion. Tendency to cheat.
Imperfect senses.
Fall into
mistakes.
Illusion.
Mistakes. Making mistakes.
And then make, yes. Prone to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So,
yes. Become illusioned.
Imperfect senses.
Cheat.
Cheating propensity.
Make mistakes.
We can start from one side and see if everyone giving an example for each one of them.
Can we give an example?
Yeah, I'm saying everybody can give an example of each one of the four defects. Starting from four.
Imperfect senses.